Welcome back to the Workspace Podcast. I am your host, Justin Moran. Today's guest is Julia Geisman of Career Agility, located in Boston. Julia is an expert in a really sensitive topic that deserves a lot more attention these days, gender equality in the workplace. As far as I'm concerned, this is required listening if you are a small business owner or if you are in any position of power in corporate America. She actually had so much information to share with us that this is going to be our first two-part episode. So sit back, relax, listen, and learn. So thanks so much for joining us today, Julia.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anything that has to do with gender is my passion, and I love talking about it.
That is clear. We spent about 90 minutes on the phone the other day, and it was a great conversation, so I've been looking forward to today's recording.
Thanks.
So the glass ceiling is real. Not the most strongest of statements I'll make this week, because I think a lot of people agree, but we're going to have a conversation around the fact that it is true. So why don't you begin to just talk about what the glass ceiling really is, and speak about a little bit of the evidence behind it.
So what we have noticed in our research is that there is a decline in career opportunities, career advancement opportunities, career development opportunities between women when they are at the staff level and as they continue to move forward in their careers, you know, to middle management and senior level. The opportunities just seem to dry up. And we have data, actually, that confirms that, because from about 6,000 people, we have data that confirms that. And the interesting thing is that the men actually don't see that. And that's the thing that people are really fighting against right now. There is a glass ceiling.
So talk a little bit about the staff positions. We were mentioning the other day that perhaps some people overestimate what their ultimate opportunity is within an organization, and then others overestimate what their counterpart's opportunity is. So talk a little bit about that dissonance.
Okay, that was kind of shocking to us. And actually, I just read an article yesterday, which I think is an excerpt from the McKinsey Lean In Women in the Workforce report that just came out yesterday, actually. And they were talking about people who are at the staff level, and we confirmed this, is that most of them are new to the workplace, many of them, because it tends to be more of an entry-level positions. And so they enter the workforce very optimistic, and they may not be privy to the impediments that they could run into. And I'm talking about women. I'm not talking about men at this point. Mm-hmm. The impediments that they may run into as they continue to advance in their career. There are other women within that group, the staff level, who are really very content with where they are. And they don't really have great aspirations. They've made some lifestyle decisions. They love what they do. That's where they want to stay. Why do they need to take on more and more responsibility? So we found that optimism tends to carry through until women begin to advance in their careers. And interestingly enough, there was a little bit of a shift in the data for the men as well. Hmm. But one thing that did come out in some of the comments that we've been gathering is that there are not enough female role models. And sometimes on a more subtle level, women who come in at the staff level, the more entry level, look around and they notice, for example, there's no woman in the leadership roles. And so that really sends a very subtle message. We can honestly demonstrate that from the time women move into the workforce, staff level, it's not even a slow decline. There's a significant decline, specifically in development and advancement opportunities.
So how does the glass ceiling manifest itself within an organization?
There's a lot of research that demonstrates that job descriptions are biased towards men. Just terminology. So for example, within a job description, a highly competitive workplace is a phraseology that women would tend not to be attracted to. But if the terminology was, you know, great team spirit, highly collaborative workplace, that's terminology that a woman might be more likely to be attracted to. So even just from the job posting perspective as to the type of applicants you have walking into the door, and then during the interview process, we all filter everything. All of us have biases. It doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you come from, they're there.
Right.
So if you have primarily men interviewing women, they're going to see things one way and vice versa. if you have women primarily interviewing men, you'll see the same type of biases that come up. So the question is, how can an organization create an interviewing process that removes potential biases?
Right.
And there are very specific techniques on that. So now you've hired, and then you move into a team environment. And women there oftentimes don't have the same voice in a meeting. There are not enough women in the meeting to have amplification of their voices. Women can sometimes not be assigned the stretch projects. Part of that is attributed to the women. Part of that's attributed to the male manager. Now, what do I mean by attributed to women? Women tend, and I'm going to be talking about trends as opposed to hardened facts about behavior, because there's always a bell curve. Women tend to want to do everything perfectly. And so if we feel as if we can't do the stretch assignment perfectly,
right,
then we are reluctant to step up to the plate. And, you know, I always say to the women that I work with, why do you think they call it a stretch assignment? It's there for your development. So that gets in the way, because as women have reduced opportunities for stretch assignments, then it means that they have less visibility. And that's another subtle way in which their development is eclipsed. So from a manager's perspective, it's important to include or equally distribute stretch assignments between the men and the women on your team. And actually, that notion of being 100% capable starts at the interview process. Statistics have demonstrated that men tend to apply for a job when they're maybe 65, 70% competent. Women will only apply for a job, typically, if they're 100% aligned with it.
Okay. Interesting stat.
Yeah. So what happens is, for every day-to-day types of opportunities, even just in communicating with your boss or with your manager, begins to build that glass ceiling. Let me give you another example. When a project lead is a male, okay, we're now talking about behavioral tendencies again, men tend to be very high level in their instructions or descriptions, what needs to be done. Now, remembering that women like to do everything perfectly,
yeah,
we tend to ask a lot of questions because we want to absolutely meet or exceed expectations. And we want to be sure that we're aligned with the thinking of the project lead. So interestingly enough, it's also a demonstration of our active participation in whatever the project is. You know, another expression of collaboration. Well, men oftentimes will interpret those questions as being not competent, insecure, needs too much direction.
Right. She's too needy.
Too needy.
Yeah. Why doesn't she just go do it?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So when there's promotion possibilities, that impression remains or filters the way the manager sees the woman.
She's not a leader.
She's not a leader. She's a follower.
Hmm.
So that's another way that the glass ceiling is perpetuated in an organization.
Well, I think the biggest question is, you know, what are the implications for an organization? So the glass ceiling is real. It's systemic. It's probably within most organizations. What are the real life implications, either from a culture perspective or an economic perspective?
Oh, there are many implications. Just from a purely economic perspective, research study after research study after research study, like McKinsey, the World Economic Forum, the UN's Council on Women, have demonstrated that organizations or countries, actually, who have fewer women in leadership roles are less financially successful. Actually, they can outpace their colleagues within the competing companies within that same quartile by as much as 30%.
Wow.
So there's a financial impact, but there's also an organizational impact. So I just read a study yesterday, and again, I think it came out of McKinsey, but there was another study that I read from Lilly, that when you have women in leadership roles, they take care of people differently. And I hate to use the word take care of,
okay,
as much as they are aware of the type of environment that everybody will thrive in.
They're more empathetic, perhaps?
They're more empathetic. they tend to be more active in promoting women, definitely more inclusive. They tend to understand social responsibility. And the reputation of an organization now is critical. The reputation out on the street is critical for a number of different reasons. One is attracting talent. And the other is the fact that you have a lot of consumers now who are activists, and they talk with their wallet.
Oh, yeah.
So when you have a thriving organization, you're more likely to attract really talented people that want to stay.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, just hit and miss or do drive-by employment.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I think losing people has a direct impact on the HR cost. Losing someone that you've invested 5-10 years into their career, having to go hire someone, train them over the next however many months to bring them up to speed, whether they're a man or a woman, has a direct impact on the bottom line.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about that the other day. The rule of thumb within the HR world is that it takes 3 times the base salary, typically, to replace somebody. And then you have the impact on that person not knowing their internal networks to get things done,
right,
or relationships, so they have to learn that. You also have the impact of that person not knowing the culture, so they have to learn the culture. You have the impact of the person that you lost going to a competing company, and a lot of the intellectual capital leaves with them. The organizational wisdom leaves with them. So there's a real compelling argument that retention is critical. So we work with organizations to develop a baseline regarding gender equity with those companies that want to attract and retain high-performing women. And retention is a huge issue.
Especially with 3% unemployment right now.
Exactly.
It's so impossible to find good people. You better be investing in your current team, and that allows you to attract even better people.
Actually, I think I read a statistic where there are 250,000 jobs open.
So you started to say it, but what should companies do after they realize this? What's the best next step, if you will?
First of all, they really need a baseline. And I know that I'm a slightly prejudiced towards the notion of data. But if you take a look at companies, they're data driven. In the HR world, they're driven by numbers, headcounts. They'll do an employee engagement surveys every year, but that doesn't really get to the diversity issue. We happen to focus on gender, which is one column of the diversity structure. And also because I'm a woman. And I know what it's like to be a woman in the workplace. So I wanted to capitalize on what I know authentically. So a company needs to know where they stand regarding gender equality. There are a lot of companies that are doing lots of things, but they don't have any way of measuring the efficacy.
Because they're not asking the right questions.
They're not asking the right questions, or they don't have a data set to be able to evaluate. Because without data, you can have no sustainable solutions. So when we work with organizations to create the baseline, we're able to identify those areas that they're doing well in. Oftentimes, it's workplace flexibility. And we're also able to identify where they're having challenges. And we're also able to surface any potential lawsuits through the qualitative data that we get. We can find out if they're major risk areas because people are willing to talk about it to a third party.
Oh, right.
And also it's online. It's anonymous.
Yeah.
We call it the LEAP Scorecard, Leadership Equality Advancement Program. We are also able to take a look at the organization from an alignment perspective because the scorecard is actually administered to the C-suite, senior leaders, middle managers, and staff level. So now we have a 360 view of the organization.
And what are the disconnects between what the leadership thinks?
Throughout the organization.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's organizational alignment. And it's also interesting to see the disconnect from the lower levels with the
going
senior.
Going the other way. Yeah,
going
exactly.
the other way. So it's kind of a two-way street. The other thing that we're able to take a look at is where within the organization is there a breakdown? So that's a subset of organizational alignment, but we're able to say at this position, middle management, the trend is that the middle managers are not paying attention. And then the other thing that we look at, and this is really around the intersectionality of position and gender we're able to take a look at the differences in perception based upon gender. And all the data that we get has been verified in other research studies that indicate that men and women have a completely different perception as to how well women are doing within the organization. Significantly different. The other area that we look at are personal beliefs around an inclusive workplace. That's really important because it's what are your beliefs? They'll manifest collectively in the culture. And what we have found pretty consistently is people will rate their personal beliefs about inclusivity very high, you know, 7 to 8 on a 10-point scale.
Okay.
And then you start looking at the reality of the situation, women's development opportunities, their advancement opportunities, and workplace flexibility. Things drop off precipitously, the ratings, which is really an indicator around retention. Because if there is a misalignment of personal beliefs, people will not stay in the organization if the organizational's values don't match their own.
So no one's going to admit that they have a bias towards one thing or another, but they're a part of a culture and they're a part of supporting a culture that is biased, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because if you don't fit,
right,
you're an outlier. You won't advance. You won't have an equal voice. People will think you're disruptive. Lots of things. But that disconnect between individual values and the values of the organization leads to disengagement and higher attrition, as I mentioned. Actually, I think it was Deloitte who has done a study on employee engagement. They found that there's only about 35% of the employees are fully engaged in an organization, which is scary because low engagement impacts profitability and innovation. The quality work is significant.
Right. I'm not a huge Microsoft fan, and I was thinking about that comment you made to me the other day along the same lines, and then I saw a YouTube video of when they launched Windows 95, and it's just a bunch of guys up on the stage dancing around, going crazy, trying to get everyone all charged up about 95, and I was thinking, well, maybe if there was more diversity on that stage, it would have been a better product.
Actually, what you're describing is right on the money, because if you have a bunch of men designing a product that is a consumer-based product, for example, 80% of the purchasing decisions are made by women. So if a product really does not appeal to women, the potential sales are reduced.
Of course.
But, you know, for example, I was talking to my bank and their online banking system, it's not user-friendly.
Yeah.
And I said to my banker, I said, you know, I bet the interface was designed by a technical person as opposed to an end user. And he agreed. And he, in fact, he said he knew it. He knew that it was.
Oh, really? Okay.
I said, oh, that's great. You know, maybe you want to have some type of interaction with the end user. But then there's the other side of it, too, which is the technical person is so close to the product and so deeply familiar with the product, it will seem intuitive to that person.
To him.
Without outside input. And one of the things that you and I talked about the other day was privilege. So there is a saying that privilege is invisible to those who have it. When it comes to gender equality in the workplace, the whole business structure was developed around the white male. And the white males are in a position of privilege, whether or not you know it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a white male, whether or not you know it. Just as when the Women's March 2 years ago started, there was backlash from the women of color and said white women have privilege. And I heard that and I said, what? I don't feel like I have any privilege. But when I really took a deeper dive into it, I realized I do have privilege. Because when I walk in the room, all I see is a bunch of men, mostly white, and recognizing that I'm a woman, maybe in the vast minority. When a woman of color walks into the room, she sees herself as a woman and a woman of color. So that's a whole nother layer that is potentially a barrier. So when you're in a situation of privilege, you really have no ability to fully grok, for lack of a better word, the reality of those people who are underrepresented.
Because you've never been in their shoes.
Yeah. And you don't have a referential framework. So therefore, you'll never really understand what it is to be in the minority with limited opportunities or limited privileges. I had the conversation with the former CEO of GE, and he said to me, well, what do we do about that? I said, the only thing that you can do, and this is what goes along with unconscious biases, is to increase people's awareness of the situation. Because when a person is unaware of a particular behavior, they have no control over it mm-hmm. because they don't know it exists.
They can't have empathy because they don't even recognize it. Yeah.
Exactly, because that's not their framework. Right. That's not their experience. So what do you mean it's cold in here? You know, I yeah. feel perfectly fine, right. you know, while it's freezing. So, and oftentimes what we'll do is negate the other person's perception.
How so?
How so? Well, you just invalidate. It's not cold in here.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm fine. Exactly. Yeah. What do you mean you can't advance in your career? Yeah, I do. I have yeah. no problem. So what's your problem? What do you mean you don't have a voice, equal voice in a meeting? Speak up. Okay, I speak up. I make a suggestion as a woman. Nobody hears it until 5 minutes later. One of my male colleagues says exactly the same thing, and everybody jumps on and says, wow, look at that. That's fabulous.
Great idea.
Great yeah. idea.
Yeah.
So those are the microaggressions that people who are in underrepresented positions oftentimes will experience.
So after you've done this baseline, after you've gone out and collected a lot of data and presented it to management, what are the things that can be done, even that sort of the micro level? I mean, job descriptions are biased. I mean, how do you go about changing an organization or helping them to change?
We pull together recommendations that are based upon best practices that will attract and retain high-performing women within an organization. We take the data that was produced by the individual company. And we say, okay, here's the evidence of a problem. Here's a recommendation to manage it. So for example, this is an ongoing complaint or observation. I shouldn't call it a complaint. Women tend to be evaluated on a different set of criteria than men. So for example, women tend to be evaluated on their performance. Men tend to be evaluated on their potential. Another aspect of the evaluation is women tend to be evaluated on likability and their ability to communicate. Men tend to be evaluated on their technical prowess. A woman could be equally as technically competent, mm-hmm. but that doesn't seem to be the criteria. So one of the recommendations we make to organizations is to be sure that the performance management system, for example, has very clearly articulated, observable, and measurable competency profiles built into it that are unbiased. Yeah. If you do this X, Y, Z, you're at this level. If you do A, B, C, you move to the next level. And that takes away potential biases because all you're looking at, hopefully, are alignment with those criteria. The other thing within organizations that we recommend is clear career pathing. In other words, if you want to go from tech one to supervisor or manager mm-hmm. or vice president, there are certain performance criteria that have to be met mm-hmm. before you move forward. So that, again, eliminates the capriciousness of advancing people. Because honestly, we all relate to people who look like us. And there's a reason for that. You know, I mean, if you take a look at the cave people time, you had to know who your tribe was. And we're still hardwired for that. I hate to say it, but we are.
It's primal still.
It's still so primal. And so we will naturally gravitate towards somebody that we resonate with.
So putting those gates in place.
Absolutely.
Eliminates leapfrogging, eliminates, mm-hmm. Some guy plucking,
A
friend. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, friend. Well, I know that person, et cetera. And yeah, I understand that. But if you have a woman on your team who's equally as competent, why aren't you moving her forward? So another thing that we recommend to organizations is holding the managers accountable. And this is a problem. Managers are not being held accountable to execute on the policies and procedures when it comes to inclusion. And again, a lot of times they're operating from an unconscious perspective. Well, if you have very practical, observable, measurable criteria, then what you will do is being able to tie that back to a bonus, for example, or tie that back to the comp level or advancement of the particular manager. Your team is not balanced. And the other thing that's very interesting about diversity is that when you have more diverse perspectives, there's greater innovation. Now, there's a conundrum associated with that, because when you have differences of thought and cultural backgrounds, racial backgrounds, age backgrounds, sometimes there's conflict because it's just their differences.
Of course, yeah.
It's not that we're being combative with each other. We're just looking at things differently.
You're bringing your own perspective. It's just natural, yeah.
Yeah, it's just natural. But the irony behind that is conflict is something that people don't like. We're a conflict-averse society. So now the conundrum is you have diversity, you're going to have more breakdowns in communication or differences in perception, mm-hmm. which some people would interpret as being conflict-ridden.
Hmm. Yeah, who needs conflict?
Who needs conflict?
Yeah,
let's just get on with it
right,
and do it.
Right, right.
I don't have the time to deal with this. You know, so you don't have to explain anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you have the same MO. I think I mentioned to you, you know, the proverbial differences that drive men and women crazy. Men don't ask for direction, and the women are saying, what? You know, and men don't understand why women go to the bathroom together.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
So you have those differences right there. But women also bring an interesting perspective, which is a much broader perspective. And going back to what we were talking about as far as product design goes, if you're a consumer product, you have to know what the women really want and what they would be attracted to. Actually, IDEO, which is a well-known industrial design group, but on ABC, they did a whole piece on IDEO and how they put a new product together. And you take a look at the design team. It wasn't industrial designers. It was a philosopher. It was an MD. It was a whole variety of disciplines sitting around the table to come up with a solution for the product that they were designing, which was interesting.
I think that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, the old adage, two heads are better than one. There's another one that I love, which is one and one doesn't equal two. It actually equals 11.
So how has the Me Too movement from the past, I guess, couple of years changed thinking, changed your business, changed your engagements? What's gone on?
It's been manna from heaven. You know, we actually have been in the gender equality space for the last 7 years. We did a lot of research to determine what the questions should be to create the baseline. We did a lot of research on best practices for organizations to attract and retain high-performing women. And people would talk about gender diversity and diversity in general. And some companies actually do a really good job. Mm. And they have a very comprehensive strategy. But to get a baseline and to hold a company accountable for actually doing something was really challenging until Me Too.
Yeah, I bet.
People all of a sudden said, whoa, wait a minute, maybe we're not doing a good job. We don't want lawsuits. In fact, this EEOC came, I think in the last year, they were involved with 66 sexual harassment or sexual discrimination cases.
Wow.
To the tune of $660 million in settlements. Those are the only ones that they were involved with.
Wow.
And then there are all sorts of settlements that they're not involved with. You know, when you settle a case, it's typically not public information. And the toppling of very powerful men in very visible positions has also really stimulated interest. So if you have a baseline like our LEAP scorecard, then you have data and a demonstration of good faith effort to uncover or identify potential problems, measure yourself against that, and it'll stand up in court. It's legally defensible.
What are the different types of companies that you work with today?
That's a really good question. There are various industries that we really focus on. And they're the ones that are traditionally challenging for women. High tech, life sciences, biotech, pharma, and financial services.
Okay.
Those are the industries that are really hurting. And those are the industries that have a lot of visibility around their toxic environment for women. And then there are three different types of groups of companies that we will focus on.
Regardless of industry.
Regardless of the industry, but even within the industry. There are those companies that really understand the value of diversity and gender equality. They're on it, or they are doing things and they are lacking a baseline, and they really want a baseline to measure their success and to be more strategic in the way they allocate the resources.
So they at least think they're doing a good job. Yeah, perhaps need an outside person to validate it.
Well, they are doing a good job, or maybe not.
Yeah, right.
But they have no way of being able to measure it. Okay, if you don't measure, there are many things that you can't do. One is you can't measure progress. The other is you can't determine what your ROI is on your initiatives, your return on investment. You know, I've been in the learning and development space for years. And a lot of companies would just say, leadership development. And I always would say, why? And, you know, what's the business case behind it? And they would sputter. Well, we've always done it that way. Yeah, but how do you know it's effective? Mm-hmm. So if you can't measure it, or you can't determine what an ROI is, nor if you can't measure it, can you be strategic in where you put your resources?
Mm-hmm.
Once again, that was Julia Geisman of Career Agility. If you want to get in touch with Julia, her website is career-agility.com. And as I said at the top of the broadcast, there will be a second episode featuring Julia in the next few days. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit that subscribe button, leave a review, and most importantly, share with your friends. The Workspace Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If you have any interest in podcasting, please don't hesitate to reach out. info@workspacema.com. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you on the next one.